Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 645 Pod. This is a podcast to help you follow Jesus, particularly for those in the 645 community here at Christchurch St. Ives, but it's for everyone else as well. I'm Anton, and I'm the minister for 645.
I'm Simon. I'm the MTSer, Anton's MTSer, and I also look after 645.
And we are in season 3 of the 645 Pod.
We are. We're looking at difficult doctrines. Love some alliteration. Such a classic preacher thing.
I was hoping you'd give an example of alliteration there. Yeah.
Some lovely alliteration? No, some lovely...
Classic craftsman cliche or something. Anyway, the difficult doctrine that we're looking at today is Jesus as both God and man.
Yeah, this is a difficult doctrine, I feel like. We talked about the Trinity and that kind of the tension in the Trinity. Mm-hmm. I think this is the theme of the season alongside difficult doctrines is these two truths we got to hold together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, predestination, our will, God's will. Last week, Trinity, God's one and three. This week, Jesus, fully human, fully man.
Let's get into it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get stuck into Jesus being fully human, fully God, how that works, what that is. I think it's one that we kind of can easily gloss over. I think something we hear a lot, you know, who's fully God, fully man. But one that once you actually stop and start thinking about, it's actually a lot of things to think about. It's quite complicated. There's a lot of things to kind of process. And I think also has a really important impact on our understanding of the gospel and the Bible. Going wrong with the nature of Jesus leads to a lot of problems, which maybe is where we should go first. Going wrong with Jesus, some of the problems and their impacts.
That's right. We will be dealing with a few heresies, which are theological untruths.
Yeah.
And we've got a heresy bell.
We do.
So, yes, as we deal with all the heresies, we'll ring the heresy bell to alert you that they are
Just so heresies. You know, what we're saying is heresy and not what we believe.
Well, should we start there?
Yeah, let's do it. You
pick your favourite heresy, Simon.
Ooh, there's so many different heresies, and I feel like they've also got really fun names. Mm-hmm. Docetism. It's definitely a heresy, also quite a fun word. I just think it's fun to say.
It's like kind of a bit deceitful, but
yeah. No. Comes from the Greek dokeo, which means to seem.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a big clue to what this heresy is that this is Jesus only appeared to be human. So they argued...
Appeared to be human or appeared to be God?
Appeared to be human.
Oh, so like a ghosty thing.
Yeah. So he kind of... He wasn't really a human person. He was kind of God manifesting on earth rather than actually a physical human being.
Why is that appealing?
Well, you get rid of all the problems of Jesus being human then. You kind of only have to deal with one idea in your head. You know, you have to say Jesus was human and divine.
Yeah, so it's easier.
It's easier to believe.
It would also mean that Jesus doesn't actually... It protects the holiness of Jesus. Mm. So Jesus doesn't enter into this sinful, fleshy realm.
Yeah.
He just stays in the divine realm.
Yeah.
And so Jesus can be upheld as divine because he hasn't really touched.
Yeah, it upholds the otherness of God.
Yeah.
Really, God is separate.
Yes.
He couldn't have become human.
Yeah.
That would have been too messy.
That's right. But that is a heresy.
It is indeed.
What are the consequences if we follow Docetism, that Jesus just seemed to be God? Oh, seems to be human,
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of consequences, like all of what they talk about in Hebrews, Jesus being our sympathetic high priest, like he wasn't really human. He hasn't had the experience of what it's like to be human, so he can't sympathize and empathize with our weaknesses and our problems. It means he can't be an efficient sacrifice for us, because it means he's not actually human. If he's just God, then he can't be our representative because he's not human.
Yep.
And a non-human can't represent humans before God, it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Okay. So Docetism is not correct.
Mm.
I've got one called subordinationism.
Oh.
Again, title gives away. Jesus was...
Wait.
Oh, thank you. dude called Eusebius of Caesarea in kind of the 300s or late 200s, was a proponent of this heresy. And it's where the Son shares the same substance with the Father. So he's still kind of divine, but he's separate or subordinate of the Father. So he's inferior to the Father. He's not.
Yeah.
He's not the same of the same essence. He's of like substance.
Yeah.
But not the same substance as God. So he's a bit like God.
Yeah.
But not quite.
And that kind of that subordinate thing is fascinating in that. And it's kind of like, it kind of takes that Trinity, affects the, how you see the Trinity, that if Jesus is subordinate to God.
Yeah.
But also makes sense of him coming to earth and submitting to be a human, to suffer, you know, kind of like, why would you voluntarily do that? Like, I feel like it kind of answers that little tension, maybe.
Yes, but the problem with it is, he is not fully divine. Mm. He's not divine in the same way. And therefore, how can Jesus fully save us if he's not part of the offended party? He can't bring forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because he's a second party.
Yeah.
Rather than God himself.
Yeah, it's the same problem from the opposite perspective from our previous heresy.
Yeah.
He's got to be fully God and fully man to be able to be the fully perfect sacrifice.
Correct, yes. So that is subordinationism. Mm.
So now we've got another one, which is Apollinarianism. Got the bell already. So this was surprisingly from a guy called Apollinarius. So wouldn't that be nice, having a heresy named after you? It's not what we want to go down with. the Swaddlinganism. It's not what you'd be known as.
No.
Anyway, Apollinarianism is basically they wanted to establish Jesus's sinlessness. So it's kind of a little bit like Jesus kind of came in and possessed a man. Like he took over someone's mind. So he was kind of separate. He still remains separate.
So there's this divine being
who,
yes, possessed human form.
Yeah.
So he didn't become human. He just kind of inhabited.
Yeah. Human. Which you ran into issues then with his Immaculate Conception, his virgin birth. You've got issues there if you think that actually Jesus took over a human rather than actually became human from the very start.
Yeah. And if he's not fully us, he can't fully redeem us.
Mm, yeah. So it ruins the humanity of Jesus, really.
All right. Well, there are all the heresies.
And there's definitely more. So you can look up more heresies. Maybe we'll cover some others as we keep going. There's a lot of heresy.
I would just like to read to you, in terms of capturing what the Bible says, a creed, or part of a creed, called the Nicene Creed from the Council of Nicaea, back in the day.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. And they, in the, you know, the first few centuries after Jesus' birth and death and resurrection, these are the questions that people were literally warring up against one another. And the early church was fighting theologically over what actually is the state of Jesus.
Yeah.
Who is he? Is he
the big issue?
Is he fully God and a little bit man, or is he fully man and a little bit God, or a second God or something? Yeah. In these first few hundred years of the early church, this was the big debate. And there's so much at stake in terms of, if Jesus isn't God, then we can't worship him.
Yeah.
But if he isn't human, then he can't sympathize with us and he can't save us. You know, so how do we fit these two together?
Yeah.
The Council of Nicaea put in this statement. So it's a bit wordy, but you can Google it. But let me just read it as a statement, then we can talk some things through. And in one Lord, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, begotten of the Father, only begotten, that is, from the being of the Father, God from God, light from light, true God from true God, begotten, not made, consubstantial with the Father, I'll go back to that.
Ooh.
Through whom all things came into being, things in heaven and things on earth, who became of us men and because of our salvation came down and became incarnate, becoming man, suffered and rose again on the third day, ascended to the heavens, coming to judge the living and the dead.
Mm. It is wordy, but it's good. There's lots in there.
Yeah, so it captures the divinity and the humanity of the of that.
And it's basically a Christmas carol that we sing.
There's a lot of what is it? Hark the Herald?
No, begone, not created. O come, let us.
O come, O come, ye faithful.
Yeah,
yeah. And so let's
talk about
that. So yeah, the word begotten means that Jesus eternally comes from the Father.
Yeah.
So he's of the same. That's a little bit later. So he's not born. So he's not an. He doesn't originate at his birth, I should say.
Yeah, he wasn't created by God.
Yes, yes. He has come from God from eternity. And so it's not like when Jesus comes, oh, there's a second member of the Trinity now. There always was.
Yeah.
God the Son was always there with the the Father.
Which you see in 1 John, the start of John is talking about the Word was with God and the Word was God.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And then it says he is, so begotten, not made, is what the creed says. He's not made by God, but is from God. And consubstantial with the Father.
Yeah, I don't know what that word means.
Yeah, so it's against the heresy of subordinationalism, which is that Jesus is made of like image, of like substance, but not the same substance.
Yeah.
Whereas if he was consubstantial, he is of the same being as the Father. So Jesus is of the same substance of the Father. He's equally divine, not similarly divine. Mm. And it's funny, there's a big flare-up over one letter of the Greek alphabet.
Ah.
So there was the term homoiousios, which is of like substance.
Yeah.
Or the term that's used in the Nicene Creed, homoousios, of the same substance. So just one, literally one iota, one I.
Makes a big difference.
Makes a complete difference in the understanding of Jesus. He is, that's where we get fully God.
Yeah.
He's of the same substance of God. And therefore being consubstantial with the Father, he's involved in all the fatherly activities, like creating heaven and earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is all throughout the Bible, you know, all things were created. Well, that's in the start of John as well. Like all things were created through him and for him.
It says Colossians. And,
yeah.
That's right. And so that means if Jesus really is divine, then he's worthy of our worship. We can worship Jesus with our whole hearts because he's fully God. And so there's nothing wrong. You know, we talk about idolatry and not worshiping the things of this world. Jesus doesn't fit into that category. He is in the God category.
Yeah.
And so therefore we're free to worship him. And actually we must worship him because he is of the same substance. He is part of the Godhead. And so if we don't worship Jesus, then we're not worshiping God.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also is important for us in terms of sanctification and forgiveness. Like Jesus has to be fully from God to be able to come and bear the brunt, be able to offer that forgiveness. Like he needs to be part of that offended party, as you said earlier, to be able to come and be effective in his sacrifice.
Yeah, so a lot of people think that Jesus laying down his life, or God sending Jesus to lay down his life, people have termed it divine child abuse. Like I don't have a son, but pretend I did.
Yeah.
If I sent my son to go, like if I murdered someone and I deserve the death penalty.
Yeah.
And I say, here, take my son and he'll take the penalty for me. Well, that's not fair. because he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And he's not the one. So he can't take the penalty for me. But say if, like, say I punch you, Simon.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yes. Then the only... Let me do it that way. Say you punch me. Let's do it that way.
Okay.
That's more in your nature. Say you punch me. So I'm the offended party.
Yeah.
And so now I'm the only one who can forgive you. You can't go to Nigel Fortescue and say, hey,
yeah, forgive me for what I did to Anton.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make sense. If the relationship's going to be restored, I need to forgive you.
Yeah.
And so if Jesus isn't one with the Father, our issue is with the Father. Our offense is we've offended the Father.
Yeah.
And so he's the only one who can forgive us. And so Jesus must be God to be that offended party. Otherwise, God's just getting someone else to do his dirty work.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, he voluntarily laid down his life for us. It's not like God forced him off to do this. He was one with the nature of God, and so could voluntarily say, I will do this.
According to the will of the Father.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. So there's the divinity of Jesus.
Mm.
He's fully God, but he's also fully man. So if we keep going in the creed, the Nicene Creed, because of us men, us people, and because of our salvation, he came down and became incarnate. What does incarnate mean, Simon?
He became fleshy, I guess. Mm. Like he was, when is it, veiled in flesh? There's a lot of Christmas carol references in
there. Oh, it's plenty. Well, that's
what I'm thinking about Christmas already.
No, well, that's the wonderful thing about Christmas. It's all about the incarnation, all about this, all about God becoming human, becoming incarnate. Yes. Mm. So what's the line? Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see.
Yeah.
Hail the incarnate deity.
Yeah.
How great is that line?
Yeah.
Hark the heralds.
It is great. So Jesus, fully God, now also fully human.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the new thing that happens. Jesus was always fully God, but now he becomes incarnate and becomes veiled in flesh, as the Christmas carol says. And so this is important for the opposite side of talking about atonement. He's part of the offended party, but he also then becomes part of the offendees. Is that it? The
Offenders.
The offenders, that's it. So he kind of in himself becomes both parties at once, which makes him the effective sacrifice. So
does that mean that Jesus is an offender?
He's sided with the offenders, but not an offender himself. Like he becomes in flesh, but he's not sinful. The offense is sin, right? Not being human.
Yes, okay. So he came in the likeness of sinful flesh, but yet was without sin.
Yeah. So he is part of our race, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like he's part of,
he shares can identify our humanity. With
us. He shares our humanity, which means he can represent humanity as the ultimate human, I guess.
Which is amazing because it means that to be human isn't to be sinful. So sinfulness is not part of the essence of humanity. It's kind of, we've kind of adopted that, we've kind of added that on as we have rebelled against God. But Jesus shows us true humanity, which is someone who relates perfectly to God.
Yeah, exactly. And so he kind of, there's a hope for humanity when we see Jesus, because we can have a glimpse of what it would be like to have a perfect relationship with God and to be sinless, which is our future if we trust in Jesus. And it also gives us hope for that in that it's an embodied future. Like Jesus had a body, he came. I mean, preaching on this, I don't know when this will come out. Maybe I've just preached on this by the time this comes out. But actually, you know, that Jesus had a human body and was physically humanly raised is really important for us because it validates the fact that we are embodied, real, physical human creatures. And that is still what our future is, that Jesus was fully human.
Yeah, so Jesus shows that creation is good because he adopts a created body, and he shows that humanity is valuable because he stoops down to become one of us.
Yeah. And so, you know, he had a human body, so it's wild to think about, you know, he was born and he was a small child. He had to be cared for by his parents and fed, and he grew up over time. You kind of take a moment to think about that. That's God came and did this and went through the indignity of being a child and being dependent and all of those things.
So when Jesus was a child, you know, like with my children, so my youngest is 3, she doesn't know her times tables or she doesn't know how to peel a carrot. If Jesus was God, did he know those things when he was 3?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think we have the answer to. There's nothing that necessarily says immediately those things when he was three. We've got the story of when he was in the temple when he was a child. I think he was a bit older at that point.
He's like 12.
So you could definitely see that he has a remarkable understanding that is beyond an average 12-year-old.
In Hebrews 5, this gives us a little clue.
Mm.
Hebrews 5:8, it says, "Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered."
Mm.
Interesting that he had to learn what obedience looks like to God, for example, let alone learn other things. And I think that's part of his humanity, is part of what he sets aside in, you know, for the divine to become human and to be actually human, he needs to lay down some things.
Mm.
And one of that is, while still being God, he had to have the experience of ignorance in things of the world. So he had to learn how to speak and learn how to read and write and even learn how to be obedient to the Father, even though he perfectly was. He had to learn what that looked like for him through the usual human experience of of learning.
Which leads to a fascinating part of Jesus, the doctrine of Jesus, is the idea that he had a human mind and will. So he actually was fully human and had human desires.
Yeah.
And you really see the tension of this in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he doesn't want to suffer. Like, he asks God to take this cup away from him, and he's deeply distressed and upset about what he has to go through, but still submits to the will of God. And so kind of in that moment, you see the will of his human will, of his fleshy self, alongside God's will. And still he perfectly is obedient to the will of God. And so you see those two wills of Jesus in that moment.
That's right. Yeah.
And the humanity of Jesus is super important too, in terms of helping us understand what it's like for us to be human. So you see, Jesus showed emotions. You know, he wept, he got angry, he was joyful.
He got hungry.
He got hungry. He was tired.
Yeah.
He went through that full experience of being human and felt those emotions and wasn't sinful. So, you know, that deals back into our talking about emotions, like how we deal with emotions and that sort of thing. Jesus felt emotions and he was a perfect human. So emotions in and of themselves aren't positive or negative, but that also leads to Jesus then understanding what it is for us to be human. So, you know, a lot of this, the beautiful things that we get from Hebrews, where it talks about him being our brother, being a high priest who is able to sympathize with our weakness, he experienced this weakness of humanity. He was tempted, he suffered, he felt emotions, he struggled, all of those things. He understands what it's like for us to be human, and therefore is the perfect intercessor for us. So he knows what it is like for us to be human, and therefore can advocate for us before God the Father.
I love this verse from Hebrews, as you mentioned. "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God," so he's a priest, he's a human, but he's now glorified in heaven, "let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to feel sympathy for our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet did not sin." And so if, you know, when we feel like there's a temptation that we feel like we can't resist, we know that, well, Jesus has experienced something like that, and he is able to resist. And so if we trust in his power and grace, then we can resist sin. We won't do it perfectly, but we can walk in the Christian faith with optimism that we'll grow in resisting temptation in this way as we become more like Jesus. And then it says, "Let us approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." We get access to God the Father through Jesus, through our brother who is our sacrifice and our mediator between the Father and us. We can approach God. And so we should have there's no need for another intermediary. So we don't need Mary or the saints or anything like that.
Or a priest.
Yeah, we can relate directly to the Father through the Lord Jesus because of who he is.
Yeah. And so that's just a really beautiful truth for us fleshy fallen humans that we have as part of the Godhead, the one Jesus who became human, and so we can sympathize, is the sacrifice. I just think thinking about the humanity of Jesus is really, really beautiful and comforting and helpful. It's a great topic.
Yeah. And there's a brand new book that's come out called Man Made by Craig Hamilton.
Or Made Man?
Oh.
I think it's Made Man.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm Googling right now. Anyway, you're looking forward to having a read of that. And
yeah, it's been on my list to read for a while.
Oh, no. Simon, you're right.
Hey, can I get a point in trivia for that?
It's too close now. Yeah, Made Man.
Because he was Made Man, not Made by Man.
Correct.
Man-made would be he'd be made by man.
Yeah, that is... I've always thought the other way around, but
it's quite an important distinction.
It is a
title.
Very important distinction.
I'm keen to read it. I've heard it's good. And that offered that, I think that works through multiple heresies and what the implications are and what actually is true. So you can have a look at that, have a read of that. Maybe ask me if I've read it when you see me next, because I'm keen to read it.
Okay, that brings us to Blank Space. And it's very close at the moment.
It is. We are 2-2.
Yeah.
It's too just funny old. To say like that.
Thank you. And our topic for today is things. What did Joseph's brothers find in their sacks?
So this is when they come and they visit Pharaoh and they visit... I think they find a whole lot of gold in their sacks and they're accused of stealing.
I'm just clarifying your answer. So I was looking up
gold or money? Like, the implication is, you know...
I will accept that. It is money.
Yeah. Hey, I got two... Last week I got a Joseph question.
There's silver in here.
Oh.
So it's not gold. I will take it,
I said precious things. I clarified the answer with...
I'll give it to you.
I said money. Didn't I say money?
Afterwards.
I said gold or money.
Yeah, so I'll take that.
Thank you for your generosity,
Andrew. Oh, no, second question. All right. Ooh, okay. Simon's hit the lead.
Oh.
What was found in Benjamin's sack?
Joseph's cup.
Yes. Oh, that's not... Two questions on the same thing. That's
so many ridiculous. Questions on Joseph. Good thing I know that story well.
You, yes...
I'm now double your points. Who caused the Magi to go looking for the King of the Jews? Well, who or what caused the Magi to go looking for the King of the Jews?
Surely it was a star.
Yeah.
Yes. Gonna say who?
Yeah, I was like, whoa, I've read that wrong particular answer. What did blind Bartimaeus cast away when he jumped up to come to Jesus?
I feel like it's his staff or a cloak. Why would he cast away his cloak? Can you read the question again?
What did blind Bartimaeus cast away when he jumped up to come to Jesus?
I'm going his staff or like stick thing.
Well, you should have got his cloak. Staff is incorrect.
No.
It was his cloak
in
Mark 10:50.
Oh. Well, here we go.
I am now officially ahead. Well, I was ahead the first week.
You were, yes.
Yeah.
Second time, regained the lead.
I know, this is very exciting.
3 to me, 4 to you.
Yeah.
Woo!
Not much in it, but...
Tight. Well, and it's a short season as well.
Yeah.
So any lead is a handy lead.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there is episode 3, Jesus, God and Man, for the 645 pod.
Yeah.
A few more episodes to go, so subscribe if you haven't, or keep tuning in for the next episode of Difficult Doctrines. And next week we're looking at
holy living for people who sin, so the doctrine of, I guess, a little bit sanctification, how that looks.
Yeah, and you know, it's a real wrestle, because if we're sinful people, how can we live a holy life? How does that work?
Yeah, tune in next week to find out.
See you then.